This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. We're back once again with the Wells Tech podcast. This is episode 393 for Tuesday, May 19th. 4 o'clock, actually, the year 2015. And as usual, joining me in the previous 7 years, each week, Sally Draper. Hey, Sally.
Hi, Martin. Episode 393, we're closed in on 400. We should throw a party or something.
I think we're going to do that. We're going to have our own little party and invite some 200, 300, maybe 400 of our closest friends.
Well, sounds like fun. That'll be part of Wells Tech Conference coming up July 9th through 11th. We're going to celebrate that particular week. There won't be a Tuesday podcast. We're going to save it for Friday afternoon at 4 p.m. So get ready, folks, for I think it'll be July 10th when we actually turn 400.
Turn 400. Who'd have thought? Who'd have thought? But
we
have a good time each and every week. This is a podcast where we talk about technology, we talk about ministry, and especially where those two meet. And there's lots of opportunities for us to kind of test the waters of different kinds of things. And over the years, we've done a lot of that. But one of the neat things that we get to do while we're doing that is talk to other people who are doing the same thing. And the particular focus for today's show is an area just kind of ripe for technology or technological solutions for productivity, especially in the church office. A lot of people are looking for ways to improve the efficiency of that church office, especially because usually a small crew. One individual or volunteers, and we're trying to find some good technologies that'll help out there. And Sally, you had a chance to talk with one of those pioneers, probably in seeking out those productivity tools, right?
That's right, Martin. I talked with Pastor Emil Burgess. He's from Trinity Lutheran Church in Caledonia, Wisconsin, a classmate of my husband's, actually. And
oh, cool. I did not know that. That's neat.
Yeah. He's coming up on his 8-year anniversary ministry, and he kind of couched himself as not a true techie. So I think he has a lot to say to those people that maybe are a little bit intimidated to jump into some tech solutions, because it sounds like he invested a little time, put some solutions in place, and it's really paying off for him. So you're going to hear all about his freeing up of his psychic RAM. I just can't wait for him to share.
And he is also a presenter, right, at this summer's conference?
He will be there and presenting two different topics, and he's going to tell us a bit about that in our conversation as well.
All right, let's take a listen.
Joining me today on Wells Tech is Pastor Emil Burgess. He serves at Trinity Lutheran Church in Caledonia, Wisconsin. Welcome, Emil.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Happy to have you. I would say this is probably, I believe, your first appearance on Wells Tech, but I think we have some audio appearances by you. When we used to run music on the show, you were part of Corbin Krieg back in the day. So.
Right. And I think maybe a couple years ago I was on for a MailChimp-related segment, too, with one of the Pastor Witties, Dan or Dale.
Sure.
I've heard Corbin Krieg songs here and there on Wells Tech podcast. Kind of takes me back to the good old days, so always fun.
Back in the day. So we know that about you. Maybe you could take just a moment and tell us a little bit more about Pastor Burgess.
Sure. Yeah. I'm actually still serving in my assignment from the seminary, so next month it'll be 8 years. So that's the same as Kevin, 8 years, mm-hmm. right? Because we were classmates,
right.
Your husband.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm still in my assignment really enjoy Trinity there. My wife teaches preschool at Trinity. In fact, actually, this is a year we have a brand new, still brand new, mm-hmm. baby daughter, Lydia. She's a little over a year. So we tried a year of Rachel doing director and teacher of preschool at Trinity, and it was a bit tough. Mm-hmm. It was still a good year, But Rachel's gonna step back and come back to the home front for the time being. So it's gonna be nice to have her home next year. So it's Rachel, me, and Lydia. Lydia's about 14 months now, and we're having a blast with her. Otherwise, things that I like to do for fun are, you know, music and reading and athletics and sports type stuff. So yeah, that's me.
And a little bit techie too. We've heard from you along the way with different things that you.
A little bit, yeah. Not a lot. I don't consider myself a guru by any stretch of the imagination, but I enjoy tech. So.
Awesome. I think what I would categorize you as is someone who's smart about using technology, maybe to make your life a little bit easier. And that's why we wanted to, have you at as a speaker at Wells Tech Conference coming up this summer, July 9th through 11th. You're going to be leading not one, but two of our breakout sessions. So lots of duties there at Wells Tech Conference. The first one I thought we'd talk about was about Evernote. Evernote as a tool to make you more productive or have more productive workflows. I'm guessing that your life as a pastor is a little bit busy, and so maybe you can give us some insight into how you use Evernote, what it does for you to help you be more productive.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the best way to explain how I use Evernote is that it's kind of just an external brain. Rather than housing all kinds of information that I want to keep track of, or to-do lists or other kind of support material, articles I want to read, information about members, other sort of workflows that I kind of just have a list of, Evernote is that place that holds all that and gives me easy access. And gives me very easy methods to dump stuff into there in an organized way so that I can find it easily. So as far as how I use it, in the description of the session that I'm teaching, I mentioned GTD, Getting Things Done, which has been mentioned on the show a lot. GTD is the system I use for staying up to date. But Evernote is kind of the tool that houses my GTD system. So, you know, it's got my to-do list. It's got Tickler file is housed in Evernote. Reference material, support material, someday maybe list. All that kind of, all my contextual to-do lists are, pretty much all of them are housed in Evernote. So it's that external brain, so I don't have to keep all that stuff stored in my brain. David Allen has this expression. I think it's kind of even become a tagline for GTD. Your mind is for having ideas, not holding ideas. So Evernote is the place where I hold it all or where it's held. And it's a very true expression. When all that stuff's off of my brain and I know it's in a trusted system, there's so much more kind of psychic RAM available in my brain to have ideas and do creative thinking and kind of focus my mind on the task at hand. So, yeah, that was supposed to be a short answer, but it was a long one.
That was a great answer. I'm digging it. So if you interact with Evernote as your brain, do you do that typically on your laptop or desktop computer? Do you do it on a mobile device or a little bit of both?
Yeah, it's mainly on my laptop. Okay. I use it on the iPhone, on my phone, at least several times a day. But I would say my main workflow is on my laptop. They've got a web interface, and then they've got a desktop app too. So you don't have to be connected to Wi-Fi to access all your notes. It's all
excellent.
It's all there on your hard drive. So, but. Yeah, the iPhone app is great for when you're on the go or, away from the desktop or laptop. So mainly that's where I use it. I use it on the iPad too. For example, this is a tip/trick I'll plan on sharing in the session. I use it with my iPad for prayers. I have a tag called Prayers, and it's easy enough for me to hold my hand, and it's got a big enough screen to easily see what I'm praying about. I have a prayer list of, you know, I don't know, maybe 2-3 dozen members and friends. Sometimes I'll walk, you know, pace through the house or pace outdoors with the iPad, and that's kind of just been a nice way to change it up for, you know, prayer life.
Very good, very good. So if folks were to sign up for your session, Emil, would they have to be Evernote aware already, maybe already users, already have accounts, or is your session got something for the newbies out there that maybe just want to get started with the kind of organization systems you're using?
Yeah, I think anybody can show up, whether they have an account, whether they've even heard of Evernote before. Some of the stuff that I'll share is really applicable to any productivity system, whether you're paper-based or if you use Remember the Milk or OmniFocus or you know, Microsoft Outlook, you know. So a lot of stuff is, doesn't matter what platform you use, you probably get some good ideas just from my experience with playing with it for five, six years. The other thing too, most of the people that I talk to in ministry and not in ministry that use Evernote don't use it in such a broad way as I do. They use it sort of, they pick and choose what they use it for. So a lot of people I talk to will use it just for their someday maybe list, or they'll just use it for articles they want to read that they clip from the web. Evernote's got a very, very nice web clipper. Or they'll only use it for contact information. So it's a nice tool. You can use it for very simple one thing. I just want to put all the articles I want to save for later. It'd be nice to have them when I'm on the airplane. I don't have Wi-Fi access or something, and I want to just read them there. Or you can do what I do, and you know, I'm kind of using it for all five stages of the GTD workflow.
Excellent. Very good. Sounds like a very versatile tool. So
yeah. Probably the thing about it is it's very simple. It's that they've not put a ton of bells and whistles into the there's nice features, but if you compare it to something like OneNote, which I'll do in the session a little bit, give a brief comparison to OneNote. OneNote has so many features and bells and whistles that it's almost refreshing to use Evernote because it confines you to not get too complicated of a system. Okay. And I kind of need that. I'm the kind of guy that will tweak things until they're untweakable and then almost unusable. So simple is better for me.
Excellent. Very good. Well, hopefully the other tool that you're presenting on has got those same characteristics. You're doing another session titled Polished Email Campaigns Using MailChimp. MailChimp's one of my favorite sites. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about your experience with MailChimp.
Yeah. I think it was 2011 we started doing congregational emails at Trinity just to improve communication with our members, just to have one more avenue where we're reaching out to them with some information, upcoming events and happenings in the church, and a way that we were able to get daily Bible readings into their email inbox and remove one more restriction or resistance. If it's there in their inbox, it's been very convenient for people just to open the email, click the audio track, and listen to Max McLean read you the chapter. Mm-hmm. And they make things pretty easy. The user interface has improved over the years. So, like I said, I'm not a techie person by nature. It's kind of become more of an interest of mine since learning the GTD method. But MailChimp makes things real easy, and it's gotten easier over the years. A lot of drag and drop stuff. Check a box and you're integrated with Facebook and Twitter. It's kind of hard to not make a nice looking email with MailChimp. They have all the templates uploaded. You just throw your picture in and your text. and away you go. And
yeah, I would tend to agree with that, Emil, and I like the word polished right off the bat. You say polished email campaigns in the title of your session, because I think that's one of the powers behind MailChimp, is that you end up with a really professional looking email, and it's very easy to duplicate and reuse templates and things like that. So hopefully you'll lift the curtain a bit and let people look at the guts of MailChimp, and they'll be impressed, I think, with how easy it is. So how often do you send out your newsletters, and how much time does it take you to do that kind of communication?
We have currently two operating emails or campaigns that go out. We have a daily Bible reading that goes out Monday through Saturday. And then we've got a weekly congregational email that goes out, well, weekly, once a week on Thursday mornings. I handle the weekly update. We call it the Partners Weekly Update. It takes me about 30 to 60 minutes to prepare it each week. I'm kind of collecting content for it throughout the week. You know, if something comes up in a council meeting that I want to get out in the Partners Weekly Update, I'll, you know, put it into Evernote in my agendas tag. And if somebody sends me an email that says, hey, can you put this in the Partners from the secretary or something, it gets forwarded on to Evernote and is waiting for me Wednesday afternoon to be scheduled. So content has not been difficult. We use the What About Jesus Worship Helps, and we on a weekly basis refer our members to those to help prepare them for worship. And I check the calendar for upcoming events and throw those in, and maybe reference an article or plug, highlight one announcement from the bulletin, and that's it. You know, I keep it simple. I don't want to throw too much information at my people. They get plenty from the bulletin and the church newsletter, and from us pastors announcing stuff after worship. That I want the partners just to be again minimalist. You know, so. So yeah, not too much. I have a layperson that schedules all the daily Bible readings.
Awesome.
A retired guy with some tech savvy, and he, I create the schedule at the beginning of the year, the calendar of readings. I design one template for the whole year, and he basically cuts and pastes or copies and pastes the chapters and a few footnotes and kind of chapter helps from the whole Bible project, and so boy, that's great. I don't know how much time he spends. Probably more than I do. So it's not too bad.
For six emails, that's pretty good.
Yeah, maybe it's even shorter than that. He's got it down to a science. I've sat, I've looked over his shoulder while he does it, and he's just flies through scheduling these templates, and so it's great to have him. Boy, it's great for that to be off my shoulders, just mentally for that to be off my shoulders and onto him. So,
freeing up that RAM. That,
yeah, right, the psychic RAM.
Psychic RAM, I like that. All right, so so folks, in your session, sounds like your MailChimp session is going to have a little taste of Evernote in it even, but they'll get to see behind the scenes.
And there's a few other tools that I'll highlight, like Text Expander, you know, some alternatives. That Text Expander saves me hours. I should probably look. I think there's a tool in Text Expander that tells you how many hours, days, and weeks, and years you have saved by using it. So I haven't looked ever. I should look and see how many hours I've saved in my life with Text Expander. But I'll show some just tips and tricks of how to save time with MailChimp. And I do very, very little work with script and with coding, but there are a few little tips and tricks for using some HTML with MailChimp to just do some other stuff that's nice, like archiving, like having an archive website where people can access the last 10 emails and some Facebook integrations too. But I am not a coder by any means.
Well, that's great that you're willing to share, that we can learn from your experience. You've been doing it for several years now, and it should be a great benefit to those who are able to attend. You alluded a little to some stats around your Text Expander, but MailChimp has great stats too. I'm guessing you'll be able to share a little bit about how you can tell whether your emails are being read and things like that.
Yeah, Yeah, and that's kind of fun. It was fun, at least when I used to check it more often at the beginning of when we first started doing this. It's fun to kind of look at how many opens you're getting and this and that. I actually don't pay attention to it so much anymore, but it's great that the tool is there just to see if your campaigns are resonating with your audience. The other thing that I'll share that we're not doing yet but will be soon is an email out to our prospects. We did it years ago, and it kind of just fizzled out, but we're kind of resurrecting it, and so we're going to start doing an email to our outreach prospects. And that, I think, maybe is going to be where some of those metrics and analytics maybe will come into play more and maybe are more useful, just to see if your prospects are responding to your campaigns.
Excellent. Lots of great ideas there. Looking forward to seeing you at Wells Tech Conference this summer, and looking forward to both of those sessions. They sound great, Emil. Yeah. Thank you very much.
I'm looking forward to getting free.
Yeah. All right. Well, you have a great day, and we'll see you in July then.
Thanks, Ellie.
All right. Thanks to Emil, we've got at least two kind of linchpins of church office productivity, at least in my mind. One is kind of that capture tool that he's using Evernote for. Just everything goes in, or he called it his external brain, which is kind of a cool way to think about it. And then a communications tool, which seems to be central to them staying in touch with their members.
Definitely. Lots going on in that church office, and having those kind of tools in your arsenal is very powerful. We have other tools to share as well, Martin, other ideas that we want to link to in the show notes today, including the Volunteer Spot website. I know that church office personnel often work with volunteers and depend heavily on them, and using a website, Volunteer Spot, there's probably others out there in the same space that will coordinate those volunteer efforts on your behalf is just amazing. It's a free sign up, and they do things like you just put in whatever events are coming up. So maybe it's a potluck meal, or you need helpers for VBS or whatever it may be, and they'll coordinate the signups. You know, you send out an email through the website. It guides people back to the website to sign up. And when the time comes, they send out reminder emails and things, so people don't forget about the commitments they've made in volunteering in various ways. So volunteerspot.com is definitely one worth noting if you're trying to organize volunteers in your church or school office. We use it around here in both church and school, I believe. I've seen, at least from the elementary school and the high school, using Volunteer Spot to gather volunteers.
Yeah, when you just kind of look around the church or school office, there are all kinds of sign-up sheets that you need to manage, anywhere from altar guild to flowers to, you know, at our church, we have an AV schedule, you know, usher schedule. All those are candidates for this kind of thing as well. So,
super nice.
Technology is good at.
Does the follow up for you and everything. You don't have to.
The reminders really essential. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Let me pick one off of my list. We both took three. And the first one that came to my mind was a product that we've talked about in the past, and that's from Concordia Technology Solutions. We've had Peter Frank on the show before. He's one of the product managers there, and he'll actually be at Wells Tech Conference this summer as well, talking about Member 360, which is part of that Church 360 family of products. So Church 360 members, Church 360 Ledger. They also have a Unite project product, which is their website tool. But there is really a strong case to be made that every church really needs something like a church or a Member 360 product, which is a church management database solution. This one happens to be online, which a lot of churches are really gravitating toward. We have a relationship with CTS and Concordia that they offer Wells Church as a discount, but you can not just track biographic information, but you can track attendance and offerings, visits, pastoral visits, elder visits, family visits, This can also be repurposed for school use as well. You can track events, and you can put together kind of a nice event calendar, sync it with other calendars that you have. We'll be talking about more calendars in a minute. As I mentioned, tracking attendance, offerings, etc. Just a kind of a full-featured solution at a pretty reasonable price. And the best, I think the best part about the product, it's first of all nice looking, but it's all web-based. So you're not really tied to a computer with maintaining that installation. The software is always up to date. It's secure. It's in the cloud and goes wherever you have an internet connection and a web browser. So I think that's really one of the tools that you need to almost start with in a church office productivity scenario workflow, that you need to kind of keep track of that data.
Definitely excited to meet Peter face to face and learn more about Church 360 when he's at Wells Tech Conference.
Yep.
We mentioned before gathering information from volunteers. Perhaps you need to gather other information. Like you said, Martin, there's often all kinds of sign-up forms. So we wanted to at least point folks to some different form tools that are available out on the web. First up, Google Forms, certainly a very robust tool. They're adding more and more to it all the time. It gathers the information and puts it right into your Google Drive so you can see it in spreadsheet format. Download it, you know, do mail merges from it, whatever you need to do with the data you're collecting. But there are others out there in that same space. JotForm is all about just forms, and they do an excellent job with it. If you pay for their more professional level form tools, you can get into accepting payments online and things like that. And then WooFoo is another. It's W-U-F-O-O. Funny name, but a great form tool as well. Both of these have been around for a long time and have a lot of reporting and customization that you can take advantage of. So both of them have free options, both JotForm and WooFoo, but also have priced out options with additional abilities and things added to your pay for version. So lots of options for forms from Google Forms on up.
Yep. I'm going to stay with my next selection, productivity selection, with the Google family of products, and that's Google Calendar. Kind of a staple with church productivity. You need to kind of keep track of things. You need to communicate. And I put together, I'll put this in the show notes, a series of either articles or things that we've actually shared in the past. We talked recently about Google Calendar getting a little bit smarter with real-time updates and support for back button that could cause some headaches before. Now it supports it naturally. We shared a while back last year how to insert Google Calendar invites into your marketing emails, kind of a cross promotion there with what Emil was talking about with MailChimp, where you can embed, you know, how you receive some of these invites or some of these emails or newsletters where you can click a link and it'll automatically insert it onto your calendar. And the same goes for Google Calendar. Maybe one of the most powerful features, however, of Google Calendar is the ability to embed it on your website. I know a lot of our churches do that, whether you use Final Web or some other kind of web solution. One of the most powerful features about that then is being able to pick and choose which calendar. So you can have a calendar for your usher schedule or your altar guild or the school schedule, and you can kind of mix and match those and filter on those and kind of have a nice presentation. We've talked also about the lectionary, which is on Google Calendar. So you have the lectionary for all 3 years of the church cycle. And which includes the lesson and psalm, prayer of the day, verse of the day, hymn of the day, and the church year color. So we've promoted that a number of times. And then way back in episode 77, Sally, there's still relevant content. Bonus Wells Tech goodness, we need a whole summer of different kinds of focus on different tools that might be helpful in the church office, especially. And we talked about Google Calendar way back then, and it's certainly increased in its value over the years.
That's a pretty funny looking logo we came up with a smiley face on it. Brings back memories. 2009, we did Bonus Wells Tech Goodness. And certainly Google Calendar has just increased in its capabilities over
that. We probably would be remiss if we didn't mention your husband Kevin's little side project. What do you call it? Google Calendar Print?
It's called Print My Cal.
Print My Cal, that's right. Sorry, I butchered that, but yeah.
PrintMyCal.com, where you can easily print your calendar. Google kind of gives you some print capabilities, but they truncate your events and things, and you don't have a lot of flexibility with it. So he actually wrote a program to download your Google Calendar to a format that you can edit in Microsoft Word or OpenOffice or whatever. And so he's going to show up at Wells Tech Conference as well and do some Google Calendar goodness, not just Print My Cal, but all about how you can use your Google Calendar in a church or school setting. Let's see, I can share my screen because I wanted to at least make mention of the fact that some folks in the church and school office are busy doing newsletters. And one of the key components to newsletters is imagery. And I just had to share a couple of my favorite image sites. These are my kind of go-to sites lately, starting with Pixabay. Pixabay.com has a lot of free imagery. And, you know, I figure everybody can use some big monkey grins out there. So I searched on monkeys for my example. And I will note that Pixabay is associated with with Shutterstock. And so the first row of options that come up are sponsored images. But then the images below that, and for pages and pages, are images of monkeys that my search term was based on. So when you find one that you like, you can just click on it. And you don't even have to create an account. You certainly can. If you want to download the smallest size imagery, you can just download it for free. You just select that and click the download and it'll go down. If you choose the medium size imagery or anything at that level, when you click download, you get a little pop-up that has some CAPTCHA to it. So you put in the CAPTCHA information and then it'll download to your computer in that medium size. And then once you get beyond medium, they want you to create an account in order to download the imagery. But oftentimes, at least for web purposes, if you're doing electronic newsletters or whatever, it's entirely sufficient to download the medium size and have adequate image dimensions and things. So Pixabay.com, lots of image options there. And there are many others out there. You can kind of search through the archives or whatever. Lots of other great free stock photography sites that you can make use of and plenty that you can pay, oftentimes a very minimal amount for just the right imagery that you're looking for. In addition to photographic imagery, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention openclipart.org, where you can get clip art type imagery. And believe it or not, they have some smiling monkeys on openclipart.org as well. So again, you would just pick the monkey imagery that you like. And when you click on it, you get options for downloading different dimensions, different file types, that kind of thing. But this is all copyright free, open source type imagery.
And who doesn't like a smiling monkey?
Yeah, love a happy monkey. That's right. So, but yeah, lots of options out there for imagery.
And no conversation about church productivity solutions would be complete without a reference to cloud storage. And in my mind, there are a couple major players here. One of them, which I've been recommending to a lot of congregations lately and schools, is OneDrive from Microsoft. This is kind of a race to the bottom for pricing on some of these solutions. The two major players, I think, are Google and Microsoft here, although, you know, there's plenty of others in that space. One of the reasons I've been recommending Microsoft is that there is a free solution that just is not about cloud storage, but the whole Office suite. You can get free Office 365 for nonprofits if you qualify, and most of our churches and schools would, which not only gives you I think it's a terabyte of storage, maybe it's even unlimited at this point, but it also gives you Word, PowerPoint, Excel in the cloud. Also, if you want to spend a little bit, you can spend as little as $2 per user per month to get Office 365 Nonprofit Business Premium, which will give you up to 300 users, but you can also get a full local installation of the Office applications, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, Outlook, Publisher, and OneNote on up to 5 PCs or Macs, which is kind of cool as well. So you can put not only on your church or school-owned computer, but you can, if you'd like, offer it for home use as well, multiple computers, tablets, plus you get the online version. So here's the answer to my question. 1 terabyte of storage per user. And you get Skype for business and those kinds of things. So it's a pretty good deal. And again, you get that cloud storage, which does have some advantages over just kind of a regular backup solution, because you've got it everywhere. You have, again, an internet connection or a web browser. But Google has its advantages as well, and they do have a solution. So in the show notes, I'll include an article here about Huffington Post Small Business Journal, the tech fight of the century, they call it, Google Drive versus OneDrive. So this is an article from back in April, and just some good information about the pluses and minuses of each solution. And they're coming down on the side that you really can't lose with either one, but they do give you kind of the thumbs up and thumbs down on both solutions, that you can make a good choice on whether you're going to pick OneDrive or Google Drive.
All kinds of solutions for the church office. And we, you know, obviously see that as an area that technology definitely can support and, you know, allow those staff members and volunteers to be more productive and use their time more wisely. So
take advantage. Yep. And if you really want to figure this stuff out, the best place to be is in Waukesha, Wisconsin on July 9th to 11th at the Wells Tech Conference, because there is going to be a number of sessions, a wealth of sessions that are going to be talking about just this kind of topic, where we're talking about prospect management databases and MailChimp and electronic newsletters and Google Calendar and Google Forms and Google Apps and just the whole gamut. If you're trying to figure out how to optimize your church or school office, you ought to be at the Wells Tech Conference. So go to wells.net/wellstechconf to register. Registration, the window to register is closing June 1st. So you've got, as of the recording this podcast, about 14 days yet before the window shuts here. So you want to make sure that you have taken advantage of that opportunity. The cost is $225, but that includes basically almost 2 full days of conference. And then we have some very inexpensive pre-conference workshops. One of those is Google Apps. Another one, we've decided through the help of our sponsor, Lugus, to make it a standalone session. So if you just can't make the whole conference and it can only come on Thursday afternoon, you can attend a half-day session on Lugus for $49, or if you're a student, only $29. So you might want to take advantage of that.
Yeah, I think the bang for the buck is definitely here at Wells Tech Conference. Certainly, if you can only make the Logos training, that's a great price for those several hours of training there, optimizing Logos 6 for original language study. But the options in the 10 different breakout sessions we're offering at the conference are just hard to believe. You can really walk away with a lot of great knowledge under your belt. So
yeah, 10 times what? 5 times 2. So you got 100 sessions basically to pick from over the course of the 2 days. Also want to make mention that we have a raffle going on, and that raffle really only requires you to be able to get on Facebook or Twitter, and kind of share the news that WellStack Conference is going to go on, and you will be entered to win a $25 Amazon gift card. We've had a lot of entries so far.
43 hours left, it says.
43 hours left as we speak. So you'll want to jump in there. Tell us maybe what your favorite sectional will be. Tweet about this. Like a Facebook page. Lots of different options there. So take advantage.
Definitely. I'm sure everybody could use $25 at Amazon.
I could, but I'd love to just give it away, which is what we're doing. So, also want to make mention in our Wells Now section that Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary has a big week coming up this week.
This week, starting tonight.
Yeah. Vicar assignments are this evening. And then on Thursday, pastor assignments. And there's a graduation commencement concert and a graduation going on. So go to the seminary's website, wls.wells.net, to look for those announcements and where you can watch the live stream of those events. And certainly all those vicars and pastors are in our future pastors are in our prayers that they bolster our church body and go forth with the gospel. So blessings on those activities. Sally, should we move along to our tips and picks of the week?
We should, but the Tab Queen didn't even have her pick on the screen yet. Let me get that shared.
Oversight, yes.
Corrected that issue. What I came across recently was in the Google Apps documentation and support area. I know many of our congregations and schools are Google Apps users, and they actually put out a monthly newsletter. And this actually is a place where they archive their monthly newsletter. Lots of great information shared about their product updates and things that you can expect along the way with their roadmaps. Interestingly created in a Google Doc of all things. So check out the archive of their monthly newsletter for past articles, and then I'm sure you can subscribe if you want to receive it or whatever, but it's just great to be able to click into here and read about some of the changes they're making to Google Apps and improvements and things that are coming down the pipe. So
what I like about what you're sharing there is the kind of the nice presentation of the newsletter right within a Google Doc. I'm so used to seeing just kind of bare bones Google Docs, but they've done some nice formatting on that doc. It looks really nice.
Yep, you can do a lot with Google tools. It just takes some time to learn some finesse about them.
Right.
But yeah, definitely supportive of a lot of different formatting and layout options. They have templates available, all those kind of things.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. Mm-hmm. All right. My pick is actually a tip of the week, and I really don't have a lot to show. These are just keyboard shortcuts that I think everybody should be aware of. These will work in, the first set that I'm going to share work with Chrome, Firefox, Internet Explorer. They all kind of work the same way, depending on whether you're on a Mac or a PC. So on a PC, if you're working in your browser, Chrome, Firefox, Internet Explorer, whatever, the Control plus different characters gives you some nice functionality when you're working with new windows or new tabs. So to open up a new window, so let's say you're wanting to go to a different location, Control N would be something that you'd want to commit to a little muscle memory. Because what happens is when you hit Control N, the new window opens, and then you're immediately in the bar at the top, which could be a search bar or could be a place where you're typing in a URL. So Control N and start typing, and away you go. Control T works the same way, except with a tab. So if you like to just work in the tabs, Control T will open up a new tab, start typing, you know, the website address or the search term, and away you go. Maybe one little keyboard shortcut and maybe even tool that you're not familiar with is the incognito mode in Chrome. I think it's called private mode in private in Internet Explorer and private mode in Firefox. Control Shift N will do that in Chrome and Firefox. Control Shift N, that incognito mode will allow you to surf the web without any cookie storage, so it doesn't really know who you are. We use it a lot here in the office. I know Sally, you use it a lot too when you're testing testing websites, and you don't want it to remember who you were. So that is a good tool to use, Control Shift N. And to close all those windows, in fact, to close an entire application, and by the way, Control could be substituted for Command on a Mac, so you're not left out. But Control Function 4, Control F4 is one that you're going to want to remember as well, because that simply closes the window or closes the application. One of the things I like about working on a Mac is Command Q, really easy to hit that. It closes the application without having to mouse around. Same thing on Windows, except it's Control F4. A little bit longer reach depending on your wingspan there, your finger span, but Control F4 will simply close a window for you or close an application for you. So I'm all about kind of reducing, you know, those trips to the mouse and the travel time it takes to take your hand off the keyboard, get it over to the mouse, find it on the screen, click, and then your hand goes back to the keyboard, which is where all the real business gets done, is on that keyboard. So why take your fingers off it? So just a couple of keyboard shortcuts for my tip of the week.
And yes, you taught me something new today. Thank you very much. And maybe I should start tracking my time like Emil was referring to, of how much time I could save, because I open up incognito windows all the time.
Yep.
I have one to add to what you said. The Control T opens a new tab. The Control Shift T opens a tab you closed. And I do that a lot.
Right, exactly.
And you can just keep doing it. Like if it was the third tab back that you closed, you just hit it several times. It'll open them sequentially backwards until you get to the one that you actually didn't mean to close and have it restored for you. So that's helpful too.
Very good. Yeah. And Control H will get you history, and you can find it that way as well. I think it's Control.
Man.
I shouldn't talk off the cuff, because
all kinds of stuff.
We'll have to test it out. If you've got your favorites, favorite keyboard shortcuts, let us know those as well. We'd love to share them on the show. Let's move on to community feedback, Sally.
And one way people can share things with us is through Digo. Our friend Jason Schmidt tagged a few things as Wells Tech on our Digo, on his Digo account. So they fed into our group. And one of them was on classtools.net. This is kind of a computer trick kind of website that gives you all kinds of cool things you can use in the classroom. This particular one is called the Breaking News Generator, and you can actually type in text that you'd like to appear as if it's a screen capture from a news report. So I was out on classtools.net, and I was able to make some breaking news. This guy's telling us that Wells Tech Conference registration ends soon, and we should visit wells.net/WellsTechConf to register today. So just one little example of some serious breaking news coming out of Waukesha, Wisconsin. So fun stuff there.
Nice.
For that.
I love it. One also, of the reasons you need to watch this podcast rather than just listen. So.
Yeah. Also, Jason linked to the website for Seesaw. It's called the Learning Journal, and it's an iOS app. So I have the link here to where you can download it for free, just to show you some screenshots and things. What this is it allows students to opt into your class account. All they have to do on their device is scan a QR code. So if you have some class iPads or whatever, it'd be real quick and easy to set this up on them for the students to use. And then they can use the camera, the video camera, they can write text, they can draw, and submit their work through this app. And once you've approved it, it can even notify their parents, so their parents can see their journal. It kind of felt like to me, Martin, that one day, what is the name of the journal that you recommend?
Day One.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was very clean and just minimalistic kind of icons and things. But the students can, you know, use their finger and circle things on the screen or whatever it is, take a picture of their work, whatever format, to to send their work to the teacher, and then ultimately parents can view just their students' journal that they've created through the app. So seems like a pretty slick tool. If you visit the website, I'll have a link in the show notes. There's an overview video that'll give you more of a feel for how it works, but I was quite impressed, and a free download as well. So if you are using iOS devices in the classroom, maybe you want to check out Seesaw, the learning journal.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm. One more mention, or maybe not. I'm not sure, in the news and or the community feedback.
Yeah, we did get an email, or I got an email from Johan Kawe, Pastor Johan Kawe, about the membership application language now that exists for Google for Nonprofits. So when you are signing up for Google for Nonprofits these days, in fact, it's been here for a little while, there is a membership application with a number of boxes you have to check. So my organization is a registered and recognized 501c3 in the United States, et cetera, et cetera. But one of the items, the third one down, specifically says, my organization does not discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation or identity in hiring employment practices, which caused him concern and me pause as well. And this obviously can create some tension or cause for concern with our churches, where can we really check this box? Because it seems like we would discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation or identity, you know, based on, you know, God's word and the fact that we're a religious organization. So Google is now making a big deal of this, and you can kind of see it in their commercials as well, that they obviously have an agenda. So I really didn't know how to respond, and, you know, Sally, you and I toss this back around, and we'll put some of these articles in the show notes, and lots of discussions on forums about this from mostly religious organizations. I thought, I was down in Indiana visiting my daughter and son-in-law, and my son-in-law happens to be a lawyer, so figured, well, maybe I'll just throw this question at him. Can a church, can a religious organization actually check the box here? Because you can't actually qualify unless you check all the boxes. So, you know, this would seemingly exclude our churches from using this free Google app service, Google for Nonprofits. And I'm assuming this is going to be an issue for our schools, too. What he said, and I'm not going to necessarily quote him because he's this is not the definitive word, but as he read this in his lawyerly way, he said the kind of the key word in this phrase is on the basis of, does not discriminate on the basis of. And when we're thinking about hiring, we really don't discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation or identity. We would discriminate on the basis of the fact that they couldn't be a member of our church, a Wells member. That's how we kind of qualify for employment practices, you know, pastor, teacher, staff, minister, you know, probably even, you know, some other positions within the church, some employment type positions. So we really don't discriminate on the basis of anything but the fact that they could qualify, they could be a member or are a member of our church. So, you know, whether that's a technicality or not, that's something you're going to have to kind of figure out. And I think there is cause for concern here, though, and he thought so, too, that this is something that Google is making a big deal of, and is not just an issue here, but an issue in lots of other contexts.
Yeah, Martin, it's a sad day to read this kind of thing, and I think we both agreed that we're seeing a major shift in the morality of our country in terms of the respect for faith-based beliefs. So I wonder what will be next.
Yeah. I mean, the other option, and I talked about this with my son-in-law over the weekend, is, well, you can just not use the service. But if that is your stance on, you know, excluding any service that has, you know, this kind of agenda or promotes this or is okay with it. It's a pretty narrow field of products and services that are available to you. And does that help or hinder the spread of the gospel by not using some of these services that are available? So it's a tough question. I'm not saying what the answer is, but it's something that we, I think, all need to pray about.
Definitely.
Sally, ministry resources?
Sure. Let's see if I can share my screen one more time. We looked around a little and realized that we hadn't talked recently about the Bread for Beggars website, Martin. Excellent website maintained by Wells members in Wisconsin and Florida and Georgia. I think we got a lot of ties. I think we even have Tony Pittenger writing for it from Washington State. So it's crossing the country. All different Wells and ELS pastors and teachers are involved in this effort, I believe, and lay people as well. A couple of interesting articles recently, one on the NBC television event AD and a review of the way things were presented there. I think they actually have a whole series out here on NBC's representation of the early Christian church, I believe. So, interesting reading. If you've watched the series, perhaps this would be good guidance or discussion material to use with a small group, your family, whatever it may be. And then they also recently published an article called Ministering to Millennials, and it was part 7, subtitled An Attempt to Practice What I Preach. And this was written by Pastor James Hine, who's a pastor in the Rochester, Minnesota area. Very interesting article about the fact that his congregation with really adopted a methodology to reach out to millennials, set up a second site for services that were couched in a different atmosphere. And he's got some real-time data here to provide related to you know, their membership growth and the age groups and things that were affected. They kept the traditional church services going at their original campus, opened the second campus about 5 miles away, and did something different. And very interesting results here and the things that they connected with the millennial zone and that kind of thing. And this is just one in a series. So there's a whole series here on the Bread for Beggars site called Ministering to Millennials. It's all of them written by Pastor Hine. The previous articles in the series had to do with topics that millennials are interested in or that might come up as you do ministry to millennials, like fellowship and relationships and negative perceptions millennials have about Christians in the church and what's driving them away. Just lots of good reading here if you're trying to get focused on that millennial population that seems to be, at least according to that latest Pew research, really abandoning traditional denominational worship and stuff. And I think we could say if we looked at our age groups in Wells, we'd see that same kind of trend, that age group in particular is really not staying as connected with the church.
Yep, excellent resource, excellently done. So thank you. And Bread for Beggars is a good site to bookmark so that you've got a wealth of this kind of quality material. So, Sally, I heard that you're coming east next week. You're going to join us here at the CMM.
Yep, I'm going to be at the CMM doing some different training around the building for the Christian Giving Counselors and others that are involved in some of the new systems we're rolling out there at the Senate office. And so very excited to be on site for Wells Tech Podcast.
Yep, so next Tuesday, 4 o'clock, tune in live. We're going to show off a little bit of the new studio that we'll be moving into in the coming months and talk a little bit about maybe the AV setup or opportunities that your congregation or school might have to use some of the same equipment and talk a little bit about live streaming and audio and some good stuff like that. Just have a good old time at the CMM next Tuesday.
Looking forward to it.
Safe travels. Sally, we have a featured video this week from YouTube.
We do. We'll be embedding this video, How to Use MailChimp Step-by-Step Full Tutorial for Beginners. Very popular video out on YouTube, and one that perhaps someone who's new to MailChimp might take advantage of. Certainly, it would be better to see Emil in person at Wells Tech Conference and learn from his experiences specific to ministry efforts with MailChimp. But this should be something to help you get started if you'd like to look at some of the capabilities.
Yep. Absolutely. If you would like to, as I mentioned, tune into the show, we record every Tuesday at 4 o'clock. And one of the advantages of joining us live is you can join the conversation and ask a question, make a comment, direct our conversation. So you're more than welcome to do that. If you can't do that, but would still like to contribute or participate, we have lots of ways to do that. WellsTech.wells.net is our show notes website. Just a wealth of information. Emil talked about Evernote being his external brain, and that's kind of our external brain, where everything that we talk about goes on there. Sally does just a wonderful job keeping that thing up to date, nice and tidy and organized. If you want to contribute via email, wellstech@wells.net is a great way to do that. And then all the social networks, you name it, we're there. Google+, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Digo. We have an email listserv. And last but not least, go to that page, the show notes page, and leave a little old voicemail. Love to hear your voice and have you part of the conversation as well. Sally, it was a ball as usual, and I look forward to having you in the state and by my side when we do our next show.
Yes, sir. Looking forward to it.
All right. Take care, everybody. See you next week.